So the three principles of preparation are having a clear vision. That's the first principle. Second principle, plan first, produce second. Third principle is benchmarking. In part two, we'll talk about the principles of production, and that's going to be down the road. And those principles are the multitasking myth, handcuffing or double teaming, and individual time goals. All right, so let's take a look at what the face of the problem looks like. So if we're going to talk about daily production and really figuring out how we can be productive in our Papa Murphy's world, we need to take a look at what the problem is. So let's take a look at four different types of unproductive people. Now, this isn't intended to be critical of people. We've all spent time being, or maybe we still are, this type of people. But let's take a look at some of the symptoms of being unproductive. So first of all, the busybodies. So have you ever worked with that person who is constantly busy, but they never seem to get a lot done? They're always running in circles, chasing after their tail. They're trying to do too many things at once. They're almost always behind trying to play catch-up. And at any given moment, they can have a couple different projects going at one time. Maybe they've got tomatoes sitting out on the table, and they're still sheeting dough or whatever the case is. And they're working in a messy environment, and they've got a stack of dishes up to the ceiling. Busybodies appear to be accomplishing a lot, but the truth is busy does not equal productive. In fact, the more productive you are, the less busy you need to be. Just because you are busy doesn't mean that you're moving any closer to your goals. All right, so that's a busybody. I'm sure many of you can relate to that. Our second type of person that we're going to talk about is Robins. Robins catch on fast. You know, they understand how things are done, and they learn fairly quickly. They can keep up just fine, but after a while, you give them some responsibility and allow them to work on their own, and they seem to forget half of what you've taught them. They act like a lost puppy. Okay, Robins struggle with self-imposed discipline and deadlines. They just have a hard time with that internally. They rely on exterior factors like rules and hard deadlines for motivation. Robins struggle to function without a leader to set the pace or provide boundaries and benchmarks for them. We talk about Robins all the time in our company, and basically we say that Robin doesn't have the ability to be Batman, but he's a great sidekick. Okay. It's not a problem having Robins in your company. We all need to have those. We need to have those people that we can have work next to us and do well. But the problem is, and Robins aren't always unproductive. The problem comes with production and performance when we put Robin in the place of Batman. See, Robins can't do the job of Batman. It's the way it is. Every good leader must first be a good follower, but just because you're a good follower does not make you a good leader. So we probably all experience having a few Robins in our company as well. The third type of person that's unproductive is what we call slowpokes, people who move at one speed, slow. A lack of sense of urgency. They seem to be oblivious to any sort of time expectations. Some people struggle with speed or getting things done because they're extremely detailed. When I interview people, I always try to really ask questions to find out if people are really detail-oriented or if they're really speed-oriented. Usually, detail-oriented people are people that you want on the cash register, and they're very good with details, and so they're accurate. But they're not necessarily the fastest people. People that are really fast are usually sometimes they're not the most productive either. They can run in circles and chase their tail a lot. But fast people at least have a little bit more natural ability to move fast. You just have to tame that a little bit. people whose normal speed is slow can learn to be faster, but it takes a shift in their mindset in order to develop an awareness to make change. So with a slow person, telling them to speed up or using authority or leverage to tell them to speed up or to go faster doesn't do the trick. See, if you're slow and people tell you to speed up and just go faster, that you're not doing it well enough, you just get more anxious. It just causes more anxiety and it makes them get inside of their head, and they think inside of their head and they're wondering what people are thinking of them, and then they slow down even more. So that's not the way to work with slow folks. See, people that are slow, they need someone to help them understand how their speed impacts their fellow workers, our customers, the company, but most importantly, people that are struggling with their speed, they need to understand how it affects their future opportunities and it affects them personally. People will always respond better if you help them understand how it affects them rather than just telling them how it affects you, you know, how they're making things harder for you. You know, help them understand how it affects their future opportunities as well. So our fourth type of person for unproductive people would be distracted people. Distracted people have a hard time staying focused on anything work-related at times. It can be better at some times, but they generally struggle with that. They either have their face in their cell phones or their mind is somewhere else. They have a hard time separating, you know, work life from their personal life. They might have attention deficit disorder or just distracted in other ways. Depending on the study that you look at, in the service industry, on average, between 25 to 30% of our time is spent just simply trying to figure out what to do next. Now, that's a lot of time spent trying to figure out what to do next, and that's a big piece of our unproductive part of our business. Distracted people allow their environment to decide for them. So we see this all the time, where the environment around them decides what they're going to do. They get distracted by any shiny object, and they're moving on to something else. Distracted people find themselves spending their time either dealing with urgent issues or up against hard deadlines. Now, some of you might be able to relate to that. I think all of us struggle with this at times. Especially if we don't plan well, or if we struggle with self-imposed deadlines and we have to fall back on deadlines that other people provide for us, that can put us in that place where we're always running behind and we're always trying to play catch up because we're being limited and it feels like we're being directed by other people or exterior environment. Even the most productive people didn't start productive. They had to learn how to overcome these obstacles. Okay, so we don't know what we don't know until someone teaches it to us. So this is the problem. So this is an overview of the problem. All of us have experienced being unproductive, or we experience now on a regular basis being unproductive. So hopefully you guys can relate to having, you know, employees that fall in these four categories, or yourself. Maybe you struggle in these different areas. So Paul J. Myers says, productivity is never an accident. It is always the result of a commitment to excellence, intelligent planning, and focused effort. So it's a commitment to what I'm going to talk about is a vision of excellence, intelligent, proactive planning, and then focused, systematic execution. So this course is going to focus on those. So let's take a look at this. So we're going to start with principle number one. So principle number one to having daily productivity is, and this, in my opinion, this is the most important one, because without this, all of the others fall away. So principle number one is we need to have a clear vision of your desired outcome. You've probably all heard this before. People talk about having a clear vision usually on when they discuss long-term long-term vision for your company or long-term vision for your life or long-term vision for anything. But I want to apply this today on having a vision for a desired outcome on your day. So this is a daily thing. So we need to have a clear vision of what our day needs to look like. Okay. We need to begin with the end in mind. We need to know what an A-level performance looks like, and that's on a daily basis. We need to know what that looks like, and we need to expect to hit it. Without a clear vision of what we're shooting for, we're simply going to be along for the ride, and we're going to leave our outcomes up to chance. Anybody relate to that? Just having your employees come in and go to work, and they go up front and they just start doing whatever's in front of them, and without really having any kind of a clear plan or clear desired outcome, and so things just happen however they unfold. And typically, when that happens, if you're not challenged and it's a slow day, maybe you turn out just fine. But if you're really challenged, sometimes that can just lead to disaster. Andy Stanley wrote a book called Visioneering, and he has a quote that says, "Vision always precedes preparation. Initially, your vision will exceed your competency." So I think what he's saying here is any level of competency that we have, that competency comes because we first had a vision, because we visualized it and then we made it happen. And so it's pretty important. But if I were going to ask all of you what an A-level performance looks like on a daily basis, I think I might get a lot of the following answers. Most of you would probably say we want to have a clean store, we want to be fully prepped and locked and loaded at 4 o'clock. We want to put out fast, friendly service, have excellent KDS scores, high add-on sale percentage, or maybe a high average check. We want to have fresh, consistent quality product, fast service, low lobby times, that kind of thing. I'm sure we would hear a lot of that, which would be kind of results. We'd like to see these kind of results. So sometimes our vision for what our day would be like is based on results, what we'd like to see happen. But I want to bring another idea to mind here. So how about these? So if I were to ask what an A-level performance looks like in our day, so how about key product counts completed by 4 o'clock by the closing manager, or a pre-rush checklist completed, dishes done, trash taken out by 4 o'clock. How about rush duties, like things assigned to each person, like who's going to fill the grab and go, who's going to pull the truss, sweep the floors, restock, whatever it might be. So talking ahead of time, who's going to do these things, kind of a plan of action. Or how about every employee talked into position, through position, and out of position by the person in charge? That's something we could think about. Add-on sale goals and maybe specials communicated, discussing that with the register operators so that they have something to shoot for and something that they're pushing towards, and maybe even having some kind of incentives in there as well. Or how about a labor plan? Who goes home early if it's slow, and who stays late if it's busy? Sometimes that's good to figure out so that we can not surprise people. Or how about station assignments? Well, I see that hit and miss a lot. In our store, that's a hit and miss. Some stores will do it pretty well on the busier days, but they get kind of lazy and don't do it as well on some of the slower days. How about post-rush duties assigned? So everybody kind of knows what their post-rush duties are, so they know what to expect. Or what needs to be done before everybody goes home, that type of thing. So if you fall into that category of the first set of people that just have some very shallow ideas of what a performance looks like, that's okay. We need to have that. But to really have a full vision of what our day needs to look like, we need to think a little bit deeper. We need to think with more details. We have to have a broader and more specific idea of what that clear vision is and what our desired outcome is and what an A level looks like. So I would encourage all of you to to think about that, to maybe do some self-evaluation and ask yourself, what is my vision for the day, or what is my manager's vision for the day, or what's the culture of the store? What do we think about? Are we communicating the details? Are we communicating this vision to other people? And I think that's the most important. See, if we have this vision, if we're thinking in these details, and we have a vision of excellence that includes some of these kind of proactive planning and communication parts, if we have that, that's gonna stretch to our that's gonna overflow onto our managers. It's gonna overflow onto our assistant managers and our crew, and they're gonna start to have that same kind of a vision as well. But they can't have it if we don't have it. Doing our pre-rest checklist, or doing our counts before 4 o'clock, or having a plan for labor or rush duties, if that's not important to us, it's not going to be important to them. And if it's not important to them, it's not going to get done. And some managers will struggle having a vision. They'll have it. They know what they want. They know what their vision looks like and what their outcome should be, but they fail to communicate to anybody else. So it gets done when they're the one producing, but they struggle when they're not the ones doing it. So having a vision is really important to make it detailed and specific. That's the whole reason why PMI does QSCs. That's the whole reason why our company does QSCs, or FVRs, I guess they're called now. So if you've ever gotten an A on an FVR or QSC evaluation, or if you've had maybe a big event like Valentine's Day, Super Bowl, Halloween, or whatever, a time when you've had a big event and everything just clicked in place, then you probably have a decent vision for how your rush should run. But here's the thing. Sometimes we don't take this vision to the rest of the calendar. We're hyped up and we're ready for this big event and everything goes well or not, but we have this vision that we apply on Valentine's Day or Super Bowl, but we don't apply it to every day. We just kind of kick back when we're on our heels on a daily basis, but we kind of gear it up when we have to. And that's okay, and that's natural. But if we really want to have a great vision for productivity, we really need to be thinking about this on a daily basis. That mental image that we have of an A-level performance needs to be at the top of our awareness every day. I like that term top, like in the marketing world, you hear top of mind awareness. And I think that's important. That's, the number of times that people like see our commercials, they hear what we have to say, something about our brand, or the number of times they see our logo. And I think it's important for us when we're communicating vision within our store that we have that it's at the top of our mind as well. Top of mind awareness. We can communicate that. So, vision is different than goals. Most people are familiar with the concept of SMART goals. Most people have some sort of goals. Some people write them down. Some people don't. Even busy, unproductive people have goals. In fact, sometimes people have too many goals. Setting goals is really important. However, I believe that a healthy vision is more important than goals. So productive people focus on vision and priorities before they focus on goals. Let me explain, because some of you are thinking, wait a minute, I got my written goals out and I'm a big goal person and I communicate goals and focus on my goals all the time. And that's true. Those are good. But let me explain. See, if you have all of your goals in place, but you don't have a clear vision of the day or clear vision of whatever it is that you're excited about and you're committed to, then you're going to struggle to muster up the motivation to follow through with your goals. But if you have a clear vision of what you want that day to look like and it's on your mind throughout the day, you'll naturally move towards it even with limited goals. The purpose of setting goals is to clarify and accelerate the process of your vision, not substitute for it. So there's an ancient proverb that says, where there's no vision, people perish. And I think that's even within goals, within having goals. So let's move on here. So counting the costs, we need to know what it's going to take to reach the finish line. We need to get good at asking ourselves questions like, what's it going to take? Am I willing to pay the price? What are my best options? Those types of things. And that's part of our vision. If we're asking ourselves these questions throughout the day as we're anticipating our rush time coming at 3 or 4 o'clock or whenever it comes, if we're asking ourselves those questions, it's going to help us create our vision. It's going to help us take the steps that we need in order to make our vision actually happen. So, all right. There's a couple more points here, but I think I'm going to hold off right now so that we can move into more of a question and answers time discussion. So in just a minute, I'm going to put us on in a Q&A mode. All right, go ahead.
Thanks. This is Mark Chalice. Actually, you referenced Andy Stanley, a book written by him. What was the name of that book?
The name of that book is Visioneering.
Visionary. Thank you. Great. Thank you.
All right. Sure. All right. So, okay, everybody's unmuted now. So, does anybody have any thoughts or questions?
Hi, this is Jocelyn Singh out of California. I got a question for you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Hey, I have a few young teenager employees that I hired, and I'm struggling with them doing certain tasks like dishwashing or answering the phone. Any thoughts that I can get them motivated to get some of those crew work done?
Well, motivation is a problem with young people in for just about everything. I think people that do the best job of training in their stores to get young people moving are people that communicate well. They're people that communicate a lot, specifically in helping younger people understand the reasons why we do things and being very detailed with that. Young people are their biggest struggles is not it's not intelligence, it's understanding, and so they can understand lots of things if we can explain it to them. And I think with younger people, whether it be mopping the floor or doing dishes or whatever the case is, I think sometimes we need to first of all get past the obstacle of getting their attention. If we can get their attention and discuss with them the reasons why we do this, a lot of times you'll see the light come on and things will click. So that's what I would suggest, just extended communication. Anybody else have any thoughts on that or suggestions?
Well,
this is Lori.
I think you have to – I'm sorry, this is DJ in Coeur d'Alene. I think you have to let them know what the expectations are. And right from the very beginning, you have to set the what you expect for them to be able to accomplish in a certain amount of time or why you want to do it. I think that's spot on. Joel's hit it on the head. When Aaron did a whole presentation on that at the convention, and we tend to let the younger generation get away with stuff because we feel like they don't have the motivation. But yet if you put the expectations out there that this is what you're expected to do and make them stick to them and reinforce them regularly, they get it. It's not that they're not motivated or that kind of stuff. It's just that they don't comprehend the way we used to comprehend. We used to do work because that's what the boss said we were supposed to do. Now they want to know why we're doing it this way. Why do we do that? And it's a little more challenging, but that's how you get them motivated.
Yeah, because it's your job, it just isn't a good reason anymore that the younger generation responds to.
Right.
This is Lori Murphy in Portland. I just heard a radio show talking also that money is not a motivator for this generation, that there's a whole study about whether bonuses work or don't work, and it's actually proven that bonuses are a deterrent to motivation and creativity in accomplishments. I think what they said is they want to be a part of something. They want to feel a part of something. And I think Papa Murphy's has has neglected that in many, many, many ways over the last 3+ years.
Yeah, those are good points. I think of, when you said that, what I thought of was, I remember hearing that the Red Cross years ago was considering, I think it's the Red Cross, I'm not really sure, but they were considering trying to figure out how to get people to donate blood. And so the idea of paying people for blood came up, and so they started testing that, and they found that people were less likely to give their blood when it got paid for than they were to donate it. Donation gave them a sense of doing something for someone, whereas being paid to give your blood just is like a job.
Yep.
They want to be part of something for sure. What are the some of the types of unproductive people that you guys are experiencing most in your stores? You know, the busybodies, the Robins, the slowpokes, or the distracted.
Well, we're all being quiet because no one can pick just one. We got to deal with all of them.
We've got a girl that falls in the busybody category, and we call her Shiny Disco Haley because anything that's shiny, she will gravitate towards, leaving whatever she's done prior behind. So it's that shiny disco ball that just gets her completely off track every moment of the day.
Oh, yeah, we all have those. We all have people like that.
And they're all named Haley. No.
They will be now.
Or Kaylee or Bailey or...
Anybody have any Robins in your store? People that you think that they're going to be your next member of management, you know, all through the training, and then you kind of turn them loose and you find out, wow, this person is really dependent on me or the manager.
Yes. He lasted all of 2 weeks. His second day in, he was in the walk-in telling the other employees he should be a shift leader.
Yep. We've had situations in our company where, you know, I would hire a general manager and bring them into our company and, you know, assuming that they are a Batman, you know, they can do the job, they have the leadership, and we'll just find out over time that they just really don't have the leadership and they struggle with working independently, they struggle with being the person in really in charge, even though they can do the job well. And so we've actually moved people into kind of a demoted state of management where we've made people, you know, an assistant manager or like a salaried assistant. Jim Collins, in his book Good to Great, writes, he talks about first getting the right people on the bus and then getting them in the right seat on the bus. And I think sometimes when we hire people, we put them in a position and it's not necessarily their best position. And so we experience a lot of unproductive behavior until we can kind of move them out of that position and get them in a position where they can be. I think the Robins of the world fall into that category. They can do things, but they just can't do that. They can't be the leader. They can't be Batman, but they can be the sidekick.
This Robin was particularly untrainable. He didn't want to take direction. If he was given direction by someone in a red shirt as opposed to a black shirt, he felt he didn't need to listen to that person. You know, I gave him every opportunity, and he quit. I did not fire him. I was still trying to get through to him.
That sounds more like a Joker.
Is that what it is? I can believe that. He laughed at everything. Everything was a joke to him.
Yeah.
Hey, Joel, can I ask you a question? How many stores do you have?
I currently have 8 stores. We've had as many as 11 over time. We've closed a few stores. We have 8 stores right now. Most of them are in the Des Moines area. Yep. How about you? Where are your stores?
We have 3 in Portland.
Oh, okay. Good. Good.
And Joel, just one more question. Are you on the board of directors of PMFA or how?
I am not. I'm not on the board of directors. I'm just another guy like you.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. Now we just teamed up with the board to try to provide a a place that we can all come and share our stories and build each other up.
Yep. So I have an interesting circumstance here in Portland. I've owned the stores, my husband and I, for 17 years, and last year in 2017, we lost about 70 years of intellectual history with all of our managers, assistant managers, and key prep people leaving at different times throughout the year for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So starting in August of 2017, I've basically rebuilt the company from the ground up, which has really forced me to look at some of these systems and strategies and update what I had been doing for so many years.
Sure.
And one of the things, so we have all new management in the store now, and they didn't start until September, so they've really been through some high volume, difficult days learning the business. So what we've done is we hold one-on-ones once a week with our managers individually, and we use a word, good. We go over their goals, their obstacles, opportunities, and decisions. And it's about, 45-minute meeting where we're each week talking about what their goals, what the obstacles and opportunities and decisions are that can be made.
That sounds terrific. I think you are ahead of the curve with that, for sure.
It's almost easier to rebuild a company, but it's easier to rebuild a company when everybody has left. where you don't have that. We had people who had been with us for 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years. So
right.
When you have that kind of those roots, it's hard to really change the culture and change how things are being done. So that's been the benefit of all of this, though extremely challenging.
Yeah, I agree with you. It really is hard to change a culture sometimes when you've had a lot of people around and it gets a little stale. On the flip side of that, though, once you change that culture and you get some systems and some principles in place and that type of thing, and then you start building up that longevity again and you get those 70 years back, over time, and it's built on a different foundation, that can be wonderful too.
That can really provide
a structure for everybody else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We also adopt in our company, we adopt the a lot of one-on-ones. We push having one-on-one meetings with our managers pretty hard. I think I have two of my multi-unit managers on the call we have some different roles in our one-on-ones when we talk. I meet with all of my managers once a month, and so that keeps me pretty busy. But I meet with my managers once a month, and my role is to be more of coaching, kind of a little bit more open-ended. How are you doing? What can I do for you? Really trying to provide support and helping them. I don't typically talk a lot of numbers with my general managers when I meet with them. I leave that up to my multi-unit guys. They'll sit down and they'll talk through goals and they'll review previous periods and set goals for the upcoming periods and give feedback and that type of thing. Usually for me, though, I like to just sit down and connect with people. So I think even within the one-on-ones, you can have different types of one-on-ones that meet different kind of needs. But I think it really is important. I don't think there's enough managers out there and owners that really are embracing that and doing it as well as they can. So.
Yeah, Joel, I don't talk numbers either in those one-on-ones. The goals might be, to rearrange the make line, or it could be anything. It's not specific to the numbers. That's sort of left for a different time.
Yep. So when you do a one-on-one with your managers, what are a few of the main things that you really want to accomplish when you get together with them?
Well, if you're asking me, I mean, we use the, you know, like, what are you trying to do this week? What are your obstacles? How can I help you get through those obstacles? What opportunities you have? And then we really try to get a decision about what they're going to focus on so that it's not open-ended of, you know, I guess in your words it might be, you know, a clear vision of the desired outcome, so that there's some decision about that vision.
Right. That's great. That's excellent. So I have a question. How many of you really, or maybe speak up, I'd like to hear from you, if you feel like you struggle with creating a vision, a daily vision of what that day should look like. Anybody really struggle with that?
You know, I think my biggest struggle with that vision thing is sharing it, right? I knew when I woke up this morning that there were certain things I wanted to get accomplished today, but not. And this is just on a personal level, not necessarily a store level, but you know, sharing what the vision I have for my day and the accomplishments I'm going to make with my family and my wife, and you know what's going to happen. And I don't know if that's just because I internalize it or just don't feel like sharing. So I'm sure that same situation happens at a manager level or somebody that's working in the store level as well.
Right.
And I think some of those things you mentioned earlier about just making sure that you continuously do it will make it easier.
Right.
I think we also forget how many times we have to say what the vision is, or how many times, like, you know, say it and then send it in an email and then follow up in a phone call. I mean, different people get information in different ways, and it just amazes me how detailed you have to be about what that vision is and how much you have to reinforce it. It's constant. And I think we have a misunderstanding that you can say it once and they should get it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think we underestimate the trickle-down effect as well. You know, as owners of the company, you know, it's really hard to expect our multi-unit leaders or our general managers to communicate it any better than we do. So if we don't hand it down and we don't communicate the vision to them, how are they going to communicate it down to the next level? And so the onus really does fall on us to do that. It's whether we like it or not, as owners of our business, we have to take responsibility for that vision. Even maybe we're not vision-minded people naturally, but too bad. That's part of our job now. When you sign on to this, this is what we have to do. Otherwise, we're going to have a vision in this company. That's tough.
I think also we thought that Papa Murphy's, you know, PMI was going to give us the vision for so many years. You know, I think at least for an established market, a mature market, it's like we had just been riding on a past vision. One that we didn't recognize that it needed to change and grow and move and develop, and you know, things needed to shift. Relying on PMI, I think, is what got some of us into trouble, or you know, a good part of the franchisee community into trouble.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we all had this expectation when we get in. Well, I shouldn't say all, but I know myself and many other people had an expectation when we got into this that the vision was already there and we just needed to kind of jump on the rails and just follow the steps. And the truth is that we have to create our own path, you know, in a lot of ways. We have to forge ahead with our own vision, and we have to make it happen, because it's not going to just happen, you know, automatically. What was that, a Dave Thomas commercial? If we build it, they will come. I don't think that's really true.
I have another question for you guys. Let me know when I can start.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So I have a manager who's been there about 17 years. My struggle with him is he's a little intimidated of his employees. His fear is if he's a little aggressive with them, he communicates his vision, that they might leave. And I see him doing tasks that, in my opinion, the manager should be doing. The manager should be more focused on managing, not washing dishes at the sink. And he thought how I can get motivated. Not a motivated, a lady from Portland said, you know, he's been there 17 years. So the habit's going to be hard to break.
Yeah, is this person a Robin? Do they not have the ability to lead, or is it that they choose not to?
I feel like more he's I'm the probably new owner with him. He worked with five different owners. I don't know what his past was with the other owners. So he's been there 17 years. He's been with me about a year now.
Okay. Well, I think one thing that I would say is that, like in the coaching world, sometimes it starts with a question of what do you want, you know. So maybe you could sit down with him and find out what he wants. What does he want from his life? What does he want out of the job? What does he want for himself down the road? What kind of opportunities would he like? It's possible that he just has a fixed mindset and he really doesn't want to grow. If that's the case, then he's probably more like a Robin than he is a leader. And so, you know, maybe you want to consider either finding out if he's willing to commit to some type of a leadership development process to put him on a path of a growth mindset. But if he doesn't want that, you might need to consider finding a different seat on the bus for him. Unfortunately, that's the hard truth sometimes when we're faced with that.
I agree. He's a good manager. He's good at. He's not a manager. He'll get work done. That's about it. And I need more manager who can manage and lead.
Yeah, it sounds like you're dealing with a Robin.
I concur. It seems like I see him. He'll head to the sink pretty quick, rather than being in the front and leading.
Yeah, you know, one idea you could consider would be you could sit down and you could actually be that vision caster for him. You're not necessarily giving him a vision of what the day looks like, but maybe you're giving him a vision of what the position of general manager looks like. You could print out a job description of what a general manager looks like. You could paint that picture a little bit more detailed of what you want out of a general manager. And then put the onus in his lap and say, do you want to be this? Because I can't really take this GM position and mold it around what you are. Do you want to be this? And maybe he'll get excited about it. Maybe there might be something about that. Yeah.
Well, I struggle with him is he's 100% a believer that if he's not there to do the job, you know, it could be cutting cheese, then nobody else is going to do it. And I'm trying to educate him negative, you know. We can't head that route. You have to allow other people to do the task, and that therefore you can manage. That's your job, to manage people, not to get your title across. Not your face in the cheese. That's not what I want you to be at.
Yeah, that's a tough place to be. And of course, I think we all probably struggle. You know, see people or have people that struggle with that. Doers, you know, people that are natural doers. It's tough to get a natural doer to kind of grow in their leadership and to do less, because it doesn't seem natural for them to do less. You know, those people like who you're describing, I don't think naturally delegate well.
No, and, he's a dedicated manager. I mean, if I don't kick him out, he'll stay there 7 days a week.
Yeah, but he probably needs to delegate to other people and get help. you know, find, either develop people around him to help him so he can share the load, the physical load.
Right, and that's what my struggle is, how to try to get him delegated. I try to get him delegated. If you have any thought process, I can, and I'm pretty open owner. I give him a lot of leeway. I don't, in the micromanager, the manager.
Sure.
That's my, yeah. Let them fly and see what they, and help them correct. I told them, make a decision. You make the wrong one, we'll sit together, we'll fix it. But I wanted you to make a decision.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good approach. You know, and maybe just presenting him with ideas about delegation. Maybe if you know, I don't know if you're a student of delegation of that topic or not, but if you are not, maybe gather up some resources on that topic of delegation and sit down with him and teach it to him. You know, maybe he just doesn't know how to delegate. A lot of people don't know how to do anything until somebody comes along and teaches them. So it could be, you know, it could be that he finds progress if he could sit down and really just be taught it, not only just from kind of an academic level, but from a being on the floor level too, by watching you do it.
You know, I find it interesting that talking about the principles of preparation and number one being the clear vision of desired outcome, mm-hmm. that the focus of the conversation is about our employees, our management, our crew, and you know, just comes to mind for me that we've often thought that our most valuable asset is, say, our recipes or our cheese, but really employees are our most expensive asset. They are what we spend the most on, and yet we haven't, many of us haven't supported the employees with education and training and really thinking about the job as it is a job for them to learn and grow and develop. And you know, we've, at least in this market, you know, the retention, we had a lot of the upper management stay for a long time. But as far as the crew and some of the turnover and just, you know, revolving door, that, you know, really focusing on how do we make the people that are at the front counter, that are the people, you know, making the pizzas and making the dough and connecting with the customer, how do we really focus on them and what they are there for in terms of their needs as in a job. I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Those are our biggest concerns. Those are our biggest challenges for sure in our business. And it really is just a leadership challenge.
Yeah. Well, we say there aren't many industries other than the QSR category that hand over $1 million business to a 25 or 6-year-old to run. Or, you know, the oldest person on a shift at night is an 18-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know, so one thing I think of from what you were just describing is, you know, John Maxwell, you know, he's got a great book called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, and his first leadership law is the law of the lid. And what that basically says is that if your leadership level is at a 6, then you're most likely not going to have anything more than 5s working under you. And so if you want, if you're tired of having 5s work under you, then the best way to do that is to increase your leadership to a 7 or to an 8, and then we can have 6s and 7s working under us. And so I think when it comes to you know, talking about vision, talking about, you know, leadership, I think the best thing we can do as owners is we can spend some time thinking about how we can increase ourselves, increase the quality of our own thinking, increase the the approaches that we take towards our stores increase our ability to communicate and to understand things. And when we do those things, we're going to be more equipped to really communicate a good vision to other people. And we're going to create space for us to be able to hire better leaders under us. You know, we're going to create that space. So that's kind of what I think of. We tend to think that that our environment just hands us these people, and this is just what we have to deal with. When the truth is, so often we can be the limitation. Our ability or inability to lead people, to influence people, or to cast a vision sometimes becomes the lid of our stores. And so, I guess I would encourage all of you to think about that and to think about how we can raise our leadership lid in our own company in order to create some space for better people, better learners, and better people that want to grow under us. So,
you know, Joel, I think you're absolutely right there. And I would say that it is also, you can include the co-ops. I've been really asking our co-op leaders to have more, bring more to the table, to offer more when we come into a co-op meeting, to give us more data that makes sense so we can make better decisions. So I think you know, it's as an owner, and it's also my request of my co-op leaders.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Anybody else have any thoughts on our topic of conversation today? I know we're a little bit past our time. We certainly aren't going to kick anybody out. We can continue the conversation as much as anybody wants to, but if anybody needs to go, feel free to leave the conversation if you need to. But if you want to stay, keep that going too. Anybody have any other thoughts?
Well, from the board, I'd just like to say thanks, Joe. I think it's been informative. I think it's been interactive. You know, will it improve? Obviously it will. So I think it was a great start for the program.
Excellent, yeah. I would also encourage everybody, if you have suggestions or thoughts on kind of what you'd like to see on these calls, I would definitely entertain the idea of receiving emails from people, and just I would love for people to contact me and let me know, or contact DJ or Scotty or any of the PMFA people if you have thoughts. We'd love to hear what you have to say. I have also looked at the survey. Scotty shared the survey with me, and I'll be using that as well to try to direct some of our topics as we go. So.
And Joel, this is Scotty, and I've listened to the call, and I've been very pleased. Hopefully, you as well, just listening to the conversation. I've been taking notes most of it. But is there a way that they can reach you if they want to send some stuff
sure.
to you for ideas for next time?
Sure. My email address is joelsmith123@yahoo.com. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me. And by the way, I think I mentioned this before, we're going to have our website up and running and populated with contact information and more information about what's going on. We'll have that on our next call. We'll have that available. And we'll also have this call archived and be able to have some resources in place where we can gather more information from you guys and as far as what you would like to have and see going forward. So, Scotty or DJ or anybody else on the board, do you guys have any thoughts or suggestions about the call? And
nothing other than anyone else who's on this call is welcome to contact and send an email to us and any ideas. I mean, obviously Joel's here too, but this is the first one, and we want to make this better and better each time, and I think we're off to a very good start. The dialogue was fantastic. But we always want to fine-tune any of the content that we can do. So,
Yep.
Just want to thank you, everyone who's on the call today. Appreciate you guys doing that and your participation, because that's what really makes this thing a good conversation. So, and J- Joel, thank you for spearheading it.
Yep, thanks. So I'll officially end the call now, but no one's actually going to be kicked out. So-